Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Tuesday morning. I hope everybody is doing well. And joining us on the phone is going to be Attorney General Derek Schmidt. Good morning, Mr. Schmidt. How are you doing today, sir?
Good morning, Kyle. I'm doing well. Thank you.
I hope you're having a good day, and I hope you're being safe out there. And a few things that we did want to discuss, and this is one of the ones I found really, really interesting. And you're wanting to allow Treasurer Jake LaTourneur to return abandoned U.S. saving bonds proceeds to the rightful owners.
Yeah, this is a really interesting piece of litigation, and I know that phrase doesn't always get people too excited, especially before their morning coffee, but. The issue here is that, of course, over the decades, many, many people around the country have bought many, many, many U.S. government savings bonds. And sometimes people stuck them in a safe deposit box, or they put them in their home file cabinet or whatever, and then life happened and they were forgotten about. Somebody passed away, and nobody ever claimed them. Maybe they were left in an abandoned safe deposit box, and eventually the bank closed the box out and under law had to turn these bonds over to unclaimed property, or there are lots of other ways that bonds could be abandoned. Well, it turns out that there's a large percentage of these abandoned bonds that have made their way back to the federal government. That is to say, the federal government actually holds them, either physically or it holds the right to them. But they're not the federal government's money. Each of those bonds belongs to whoever the rightful heir is of the person who bought it. And there's a lot of those. Federal government doesn't do a very good job of trying to get people's money back to them. But the states, by contrast, have these unclaimed property programs. Kansas has one. Every state has one. Where when there's property that's abandoned, like left in a safe deposit box, for example, that eventually is abandoned, there's a requirement that, in that case, the bank or whoever has the abandoned property has to turn it into unclaimed property. And then it's the job of, in Kansas, the state treasurer who runs the unclaimed property program to make that available and to try to get that money back to people. So what we've been working with the treasurer on now for actually close to a decade, we started this, I think, in 2011, for all of those abandoned savings bonds that the federal government holds, where the last known owner was in Kansas. So there's a connection to Kansas. Excuse me. We want the feds to give the proceeds of those bonds, the rights to those bonds, to the state of Kansas so that we can put them in the unclaimed property program so that the treasurer can try to go find who they actually belong to and give them back. Seems like a perfectly sensible move. But the federal government's resisted this effort all along the way. We have a Kansas law that provides for it. A Kansas court has entered judgment in favor of the state saying, please do this. The federal government still wouldn't move. So we eventually filed a federal lawsuit asking a federal court to order that these bonds be transferred to Kansas so we can try to give them back to their rightful owners. The federal court agreed and entered judgment in favor of Kansas. The federal government appealed. The federal appellate court disagreed and said that Kansas is not allowed to get access to these bonds to try to give them back. So we have now asked the U.S. Supreme Court to review that federal appellate court ruling. We just filed that request about a week ago, working very closely with the state treasurer on this. And I hope the court will take it. I hope they'll take a look at this. When it all boils down, the bottom line is if we win, there's a chance we can give a lot of people their money back. And if we lose, that money is going to stay with the federal government in perpetuity. That's the bottom line.
And it makes sense to give this money back to the rightful owners. But as you said, sometimes the federal government doesn't like to let go of that money if it hits to them. They really don't like to let it go. So hopefully this Supreme Court will be able to look at that and rule in favor of Kansas. We're talking to Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt this morning here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Another topic I did want to bring up was, the scope of emergency powers during this pandemic, and what is your role with regard to these powers?
Well, there's been so much said about the use of emergency powers during the COVID-19 response, and of course, most people agree that this has been an extraordinary circumstance, and that extraordinary measures have been necessary, and almost everybody has complied voluntarily. which generally is true if you give people good advice and show them why something should be done, like staying indoors for an extended period or not going out to eat or whatever it may be, wearing masks, most people will do it. But the issue becomes as this drags on, as the pandemic continues, and as, at least for now, the worst is behind us. Some are predicting another wave at some point, but for now, the worst appears to be behind us. And as we get more and more data and discover that while every part of Kansas is affected in some way, the reality is that the vast majority of infections are concentrated in about 7 counties. And currently we have 21 counties with no confirmed cases and another 40-some that have fewer than 10 per county, which is not to counsel, throw caution to the wind, but it is to suggest that perhaps a one-size-fits-all approach over time is not the best way to respond to this going forward. So all of that's by way of saying normally these types of issues would all get vetted out in the legislative process. I mean, it's messy and we all kind of laugh at it from time to time, but at the end of the day, the way we make laws that govern ourselves in this country and in this state is we elect people to go to the legislature or to Congress, and they debate all these issues, they spot the issues, they reflect the views of their constituents, and eventually they come to a majority prevailing view and they pass a law. And that way everybody's point of view gets taken into account. But unfortunately, that's not what's been happening, can't be happening, in the pandemic response. The legislature has been adjourned in part because they thought it wasn't safe to join together, to come together in order to debate and enact law. They've had no direct role as a body in what the law ought to be during the pandemic. Instead, the governor, using emergency powers that are provided for by law, has been calling all the shots. And, you know, I don't mean to be critical of the governor. That's not my point. It's just to say that no individual in our system, no one individual is supposed to be able to, over time, merely decree, this is the law, thou shalt follow it. We're now on our 30th executive order. The governor's entered in the last about 9 weeks of the pandemic, when the legislature at one point tried to exercise oversight and say, you can't do that. The governor took him to court, and the Supreme Court of Kansas agreed with the governor and invalidated the oversight. So, you know, there are some somewhat concerning trends here, how willingly we've accepted this really unusual way to create new law that binds everybody. And so our role has been to be, I suppose, in some way, the contrarian voice in all of this. Again, not that we set out to cause trouble, it's just there really are important issues here in addition to the public health issues. Public health is critically important, so is liberty. So are religious issues, so are speech issues, so are issues of the proper role of government. And so we've tried to voice those issues, I hope respectfully, all the way along. Most of the time we've done it privately. The governor's been good about allowing us to review many of her proposed executive orders before she issues them. She doesn't have to do that by law. She probably should have to, but she doesn't. The law doesn't require it. We've had lots of suggestions. She's taken most of them, I would say north of 90%, maybe north of 95%. But she hasn't taken all of them. And, you know, there have been a few occasions where we've offered advice, she hasn't taken it, and that's wound up in a very public dispute, like her order criminalizing the gathering for church over Easter. Not that we thought it was a good idea that people gather in groups, we didn't, and I said that. But it's quite a different question whether the government has the authority to make it a crime, subject to arrest, potential incarceration, and fine, for people to gather in groups. And we pointed that out. The governor proceeded. Turns out a couple of churches filed a federal lawsuit, and not surprisingly, they won, because the government does not have that power. So our role has largely been to try to be the voice of the loyal opposition, not in a political sense, but in a are you really sure you want to do that sense. And I hope that Kansas has avoided a number of problems because of that, and the ones that we haven't been able to avoid, I hope, have been narrowed and more properly framed.
So and I do kind of agree with you that, you know, you got some Kansas counties that have no, you know, COVID-19 cases, and but they're still being fit under this one size fits all thing that's going on. And it's, I don't know if you agree with me on this or not, but I mean, I think maybe those counties should be allowed to, you know, to kind of make their own rules on that, because again, if they have like no cases or maybe just one case, it's not the same as other counties that have like, you know, 200 some odd cases.
Right. I mean, obviously people travel and the virus doesn't respect county lines. And so that general point suggests that, you know, everybody, regardless of where you live, needs to continue to be cautious, use good public health practices. That certainly is true. But on the other hand, it also is true, we now know that, at least at this point, the problem is much more pronounced in some areas than others. And there are some areas that simply haven't been touched by the virus. You know, why does it make sense to prohibit, of course, barbers can now technically open under restricted rules, but until last week, a barber couldn't open. Why does it make sense to say somebody in a small rural county in the western part of the state that has 2,000 residents, no COVID cases, and no COVID cases in any of its adjoining counties, why does it make sense to say a barber in that local community can't cut the hair of somebody else from that local community? That doesn't make any sense at all. And yet that's been the rule, because we've been under this one statewide, one-size-fits-all sort of approach. I actually yesterday received a letter from a public health officer in a mid-sized county. It's actually a county slightly larger than Montgomery County. I won't tell you where it is. It doesn't matter. It was a letter that this public health officer, and of course the public health officer, there's one in every county, and the public health officer is responsible for dealing most directly with public health issues in that county. That's what Kansas law provides for. We're all focused on what's happening at the state level, but a lot of that action is the shots get called by local health officers. I actually got a letter yesterday from a public health officer in this county, a little larger than Montgomery County. It was a letter he'd sent to state leadership, to I think the governor and Secretary of Health and Environment. And basically, I thought it was a very thoughtful letter. He went through in great detail what's happened in their county regarding COVID-19. They've had very few cases. He analyzed every case and explained, you know, how they knew how it was caused. They traced it back. They were outlier bits of behavior. There was no significant person-to-person transmission in the community. And this public health officer was asking for more leniency to be allowed to open their economy more, if you will, than what the state currently is permitting. The health officer was asking for that. And I thought that was a pretty good illustration that perhaps now 9 weeks into this, we've reached a point. The state really needs to be very, very mindful that one-size-fits-all approach probably doesn't make the most sense going forward.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you on that, Mr. Schmidt. We're talking to Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt here this morning on the Mighty 690 KGGF. One more item I did want to bring up to you, and I found this one interesting as well. You're wanting the government basically to investigate China's role in the pandemic. There's been a lot of talk about this, that, you know, the Chinese country had been, you know, basically been very secretive about how this maybe have gotten out.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, of course, we've all seen the news reports, and we don't yet know exactly what the facts are. Maybe somebody knows, but most of us don't know. But I do think those facts have to be developed. For better or for worse, we live in a litigious society, and there are going to be lawsuits, and lots of them, as a result of this COVID pandemic. And some of those lawsuits are going to attempt to recover from whoever caused or contributed to its spread early on. And at least based on current news reports and some current congressional inquiries, it looks like the Chinese government, the Communist Party of China, may have had a role in that. Either they may have contributed to the origins of the virus, or if they didn't do that, they may have actively covered up information that they knew about its highly infectious nature and allowed it to spread when they knew better early on. And the reason that matters, again, we're in a litigious society. There are going to be lawsuits. Some of those lawsuits are almost certainly going to be against the Chinese government. The U.S. Supreme Court actually just this last week, actually just yesterday, approved, allowed a group of people whose loved ones were killed by Al-Qaeda, not in 9/11, but in attacks that occurred in the late 1990s, to go forward with their lawsuit against the government of Saudi Arabia on the theory that Saudi Arabia knew and essentially aided and abetted Al-Qaeda in some of those early attacks. And so, you know, this is a real and timely issue. There are going to be lawsuits. They're going to name the Chinese government. some of those lawsuits may actually be brought on behalf of public entities. The state of Missouri has already sued the Chinese on the theory that they've incurred tremendous costs to their taxpayers for COVID-19, and if the Chinese contributed to the damage, they ought to pay reimburse part of the cost. The state of Mississippi has said they're looking at doing the same thing. So all that's by way of saying my only take on it is, rather than have hundreds and hundreds of different courts around the country try to figure out what the facts actually are regarding the Chinese government's role in the early stages of all this, and courts aren't going to be very suited for that, why don't we have a formal congressional investigation? Congress has oversight powers. They obviously have a role in dealing with U.S. foreign policy. They have the ability to get access to information courts aren't going to be able to readily get access to. And let's get Congress to do the investigation and create that basic factual record of here's what we can show the Chinese government's role was in all this. That way we all have a common starting point, and it's not just sort of litigation chaos for the next, perhaps, decades. So that's what we're trying to accomplish, and I hope that it's I hope it's successful. I do think, based on the information in the public record now, there probably are legitimate claims against the Chinese government, but we'll see how things unfold.
Well, Mr. Schmidt, thank you so much for coming on today, giving us a few minutes of your time. I know you've been very busy lately, so again, I thank you for coming on today and talking about what is going on all around Kansas. And again, I appreciate it, and I hope you have a fantastic day, sir.
Thank you, too. Take care, Kyle. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Derek Schmidt, the Attorney General of the state of Kansas. So appreciate him coming on today, lending credence to a lot of stuff. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have Fox News at the top of the hour. You're listening to Mighty 690 KGGF.